Okay, welcome back to the Investigative Journal on this November 10th, 2014 day on our calendar. I'm your host, Greg Anthony, and you're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. You can also catch this show on Liberty Radio, Liberty Radio Live, and also on some AM stations in the South. Now, let's talk about the Tony Alamo case again. Now, Friday I concentrated on some of the irregularities in his trial, and I wanted to mention right at the outset the reason that I'm concentrating on this case is because it clearly shows that Rome is connected to our government, and our government and Rome does not like anybody talking about the truth about them. And he's been doing it for 40 years, and I've told you on the show many times, they've been trying to frame him, and they have put him in jail before for framed IRS charges for four years, I believe. And they've been doing this for about 30 or 40 years. And a lot of things that went on in the trial were irregular. To me, it was worse than a kangaroo court. I have a law degree, and I'm by no means a legal scholar. But one of the reasons I wanted to get into law was because, you know something, I always felt there was a lot of injustice in the world. And I learned that when I was a journalist, because when I was a kid, the first thing I wanted to do was to write and find out about the truth, a very idealistic kid. And what I found out was my profession that I joined basically wasn't about finding the truth. It was about covering the truth. And the major newspapers and radio stations and TV stations do that, and they cover for the beast in Rome. And dejected, neglected, and still with truth in hand, I decided to go into the law profession, figuring maybe I can find some justice there. Well, I find even worse situations there, and I pick two professions that I'm sorry to say I'm very embarrassed about. However, I've learned a lot throughout those years, and what the one thing I did learn was who was behind it all. Why was the media not telling the truth? Why were they covering for Rome? And then why is our legal system so topsy-turvy and upside down, where many people go to jail for no reason? Many people who basically try to buck the system, let's use that phrase, end up in jail because of a lopsided court system and unfair and crooked judges. I said a long time ago that the most endangered species in the world right now is an honest judge, and especially here in America. And what makes it really even worse is that we pretend that we have the greatest system in the world. We put out this PR campaign that we have freedom, we have a constitution, we have the justice system. But on paper, it's great. But as it works its way through, as it actually does work, it is really not what it pretends to be. And so I concentrate on this Alamo story because, to me, it shows how the whole thing, the whole gamut of what we talk about, comes clear in this case. Because what we see here is someone who's, let's boil this down to the simplest of scenarios. Here we have a man who has a Bible-believing ministry. Now, I said a long time ago that many people have different views on the Bible, and I'm not particularly wanting you or saying, listen, let's all believe the same thing. Let's all interpret the Bible in the same way. No, and you may have some disagreements on the way many people interpret the Bible, including Tony. So that's not the point. The point is, he spoke up against the beast in Rome, and he did it for a long time. And when you do that, you open up a situation where you're not only criticizing what Rome does to Bible believers for trying to point out what Rome's major goal is, and that is for everyone to be under their umbrella, but you also get into the secular world and see how she controls our foreign and domestic policy. And he was very, very adamant about that. So, finally, I remember when this came down in 2008, I had spoken to him, even a year before that. And he was telling me that they would, telling me they were, again, on his case. And, I had former FBI undercover agents tell me the same thing and basically say they couldn't find anything, so they left Now, when you have an undercover agent, the FBI, if you don't play ball with them, will just disassociate and say, hey, we don't even know this guy. And that's apparently what happened in this case with a couple of these informants. But let's get back to some of the irregularities of the trial. I was pointing out last week that first, there should have been a change of venue. Because if you know the prejudice that was going on in Fauk, Arkansas, where this trial took place, you will see how could a man get a fair trial after the whole town had been poisoned regarding this ministry by the media, by the local authorities. And, you know, I remember right after this happened, and the trial was getting set up and everything, I made, along with a couple other people, I said, I bet you he can't get a fair trial there, and I bet you that the change of venue never gets done. And I said, well, let's make some random calls. So we just called a number of businesses there. And out of the clear blue sky, I would just say something like, I hear this Tony Alamo has been arrested. What do you think of that ministry? And, you know, we're just doing a little survey here for our news media. Oh, and I'll tell you, not one person had one good thing to say about it. And basically, they were reiterating what was already in the newspapers or what they had heard in the past. So, how could he get a fair trial there? He couldn't. But the trial went on anyway. So then when you see what happened in the trial, like I brought out last week, go to my show Friday, you'll see that there was never a defense in this case. And let me get into some of the things that were pointed out to me by onlookers at the trial that I compiled here, and see what you think. You know, I'm not trying to sway your opinion. You know, what I'm trying to do is show both sides of the story. You know, this should have been done in the trial, but it never was. And the reason is because I believe this man was framed. And if you want to look at this case as a legal case, and if I was a defense attorney, I would take this case on and I'd say, listen, there is so much evidence here that shows this man was framed that, you know, I am convinced that we can win this case. But apparently, the attorneys who are getting paid a lot of money didn't take this case on as zealously as they should have. And that's another side of the story that is quite interesting. But anyway, let's look at some of the irregularities of the case from some of the people that were there and some of my views, because I've been close to this case for a long time. So, you know, when you look at the trial testimony in this case, one thing that immediately hits you in the face is, where are the cross-examinations here? When you read the transcripts of this case, I'm going, where is the cross-examinations? Other than a mediocre amount of small questioning of one of the complaining witnesses, you find almost no cross-examination, which is strange. What does it show you? That shows you that there was really no investigation done, no preparation for trial, and really no defense. Man was convicted of 10 counts of serious violations in 10 days. So that's one count a day. I mean, I've seen petty theft trials go on longer than that. So where is the investigation? Now, if you know anything about courtroom activity, where cross-examination comes into play is from your preparation, from knowing, you know, here's what I found out, here's what the complaining witness is saying, but here's what, you know, I want, you know, cross-examine you about. But there was very little. Now, this is absolutely necessary to get a fair trial in this huge case the government was working on for years. There was a complete, I believe, ineffective assistance of counsel. And I believe if anybody looks at, you know, his motion to quash this trial, a judge who's now sitting on it for almost 2 years would have no other, you know, basically would say this defense was lacking, and, you know, there should have been something that came down from them saying, listen, you know, you got to give this guy, you know, what's going on with the defense? You can't just sit back and drink your coffee. Now, aside from that, the transcript of the trial also shows that the government witnesses were allowed to go on long monologues during the case, unhindered. Whatever happened to the, I'm just a stupid law student, but I could get up and say, objection, narration, you know. I mean, there's a lot of ways to, but nothing was done. You'll hear long monologues unhindered. While every witness for Tony Alamo was constantly cut off and often stopped in mid-sentence. The prosecution allowed them to say what they wanted to get out of the witness and never let them explain. Not like the monologues that were coming from the prosecution. They were shut down before they could even get to the truth, and the defense lawyer did not come to any assistance, and the judge enforced that. So, the thing I'm thinking about, were Tony Alamo's mediocre attorneys, or even, let's say, inept attorneys, maybe because, why? Were they intimidated and preferred to just go along with the overwhelming bias against Tony by not putting up a strong fight? When a deck of cards is stacked so far against a defendant like this, the media and the public opinion so negative, and the jury and judge are already so poisoned against the client, do you really think the attorneys wanted to dive into good cross-examinations here? Do you think they wanted to play the game? They'd already gotten paid. And they kind of realized that the judge is not going to crack down on a lousy defense like he should. The women, I believe, you have to look at this, witnesses here, perhaps were helpless, pitiful victims. You know? Now, who wants to call a victim a liar? Who wants to basically look at these girls and say, oh, they can't be telling the truth. They couldn't be. Oh, no. Who wants to rake a young victim like this over the coals and cause a floor show of tears and sobs? Do you think you'd win over the prejudiced jury that way? No. Another point I'm going to raise is it's a touchy situation, but we have to look back at how each one of these witnesses, four or five of them, that's all they had over all those years, were each one taken back to a place and counseled for weeks. We went over that many times. It wasn't as if they came forward. They were hounded. Many others were hounded that basically told their story, but were they allowed to come on in the trial and testify about the prosecution's activity once they found these witnesses? No. Now, there's another point that's an onlooker in the trial wanted to raise, and let's go over this. If the prosecution really felt that Alamo was guilty of illicit sex with minors, then why wasn't he tried for that? Just think about that. Why wasn't he charged with the crime of rape? Simple and clear. That would be cut and dried charge in any Arkansas court, any court in the land, but they had to have a reason for not using that. They obviously decided that was not going to fly. So they created a complex federal case to keep him under federal jurisdiction, knowing he traveled an awful lot with a lot of different people, and we'll get into that. And these young women sometimes got to travel as well with him. Now, Tony was charged with 10 counts of the Mann Act, spanning 12 years, from 1993 to 2005. Now, the Mann Act, let's look at this a little bit, was enacted way back in 1910. Representative Mann introduced the act in December 1909 at the request of Chicago prosecutors who claimed that girls and women were being forced into prostitution by unscrupulous pimps and others. The term white slavery became popular to describe the predicament these females faced. So let's look at the intent of the Mann Act. The intent of the Mann Act was to crack down on pimps who were crossing state lines for prostitution purposes and taking women there in bondage and white slavery to make money off of them. Nowhere farther from the truth than what was going on at the Lamo Ministry. The term white, why? You know something? A lot of this stuff should have been brought up at the trial. Why wasn't it? Why? I mean, do we have attorneys that are just collecting, you know, they pay one attorney $350,000 to represent him, and what did they get? My goodness. So the term white slavery under the Mann Act in 1909 became popular to describe the predicament these females faced. It was alleged that men were tricking, coercing, and drugging females to get them involved into prostitution, and then forcing them to stay in brothels. The legislation, folks, back then was intended to stop interstate trafficking of women. This was not what was going on at the Alamo Ministry. Though federal criminal statutes were rare in 1910 and seen as an attack on state police powers, the legislation encountered little opposition. Of course it's not going to come. I mean, who would say anything against that? The act made it a felony to transport knowingly any woman or girl in interstate commerce or foreign commerce for prostitution, debauchery, and other immoral purposes. It also made it a felony to coerce a woman or a girl into such immoral acts. So where was the interstate or foreign commerce in this case? There was none. It did not exist. Now, I get back to that statement I made earlier. If the government felt he was really guilty of illicit sex crimes, they would have charged him with rape. But they realized they had to finagle this case to get this man framed by using a statute like the Mann Act, which has nothing to do with what was going on at this Bible-believing ministry. Now, here's really one of the benefits if they kept Alamo under federal jurisdiction. If Tony's case was composed of federal charges rather than state, the appeal would go to the Eighth Circuit, where the senior status judge was Morris Arnold. That's where he sits. He just happens to be the judge Tony was accused of wanting, of kidnapping in 1991. He was acquitted in that case. So we're going back way, way back how these people have been trying to get him. Earlier in 91, this Judge Arnold was one who caused all the church properties in Nashville and Arkansas to be sold on the courthouse steps for pennies on the dollar, just as was done this most recent time around. That was due to the civil case where two men embezzled over $100,000 from the church. The church brought the complaint with plenty of proof to the Fort Smith District Attorney's Office, and guess what they did? They refused to prosecute now. Selective enforcement, selective prosecution, wanting to frame a man and dismantle a ministry, this case reeks with that. And I love, listening to the internet channels and all these pious Bible believers, just spouting off on, every single thing about, the Bible and all, damning this, damning that. But you know something? You gotta walk the walk, not just talk the talk. And that's what I hear from most of these churches when I go in. I don't hear it from this group. They were walking the walk, and they're still walking the walk. And let's finish this half hour with this. I'll come back to some more stuff. Let's finish with this, and then I want to go into some of the statistics this week to show you how many people they're still reaching and why the government wanted to shut them down and why the Vatican wanted to shut them down. Now, so we want to keep him. They want to keep him under federal charges. Judge Morris, who's already biased, who's already wanted to put this guy away, or got orders to do that years ago. So when the shoe's on the other foot, and they bring a case where somebody embezzled money from them, and they wanted some justice, they didn't get it. So the two ex-members of the church who emptied the bank account of church funds and stole it got a cult awareness network attorney named Peter Georgiades, or whatever his name is, G-E-O-R-G-I-A-D-E-S, to sue the church. These two men who abandoned their wives and families then sued Tony for alienation of affection. Oh, my God. This and other absurd charges were upheld against Tony and the ministry by, guess who? One of the members of the Most Endangered Species Club, a crooked judge named Judge Morris Arnold. To cover the judgment award from this case, the U.S. Marshals took the Nashville church and housing and then came storming into the Arkansas church properties and took everything they could, including any money on people's persons, vehicles, Alamo design jackets found there on the church property, and other things. It was a free-for-all, stealing whatever they wanted. This left many families in a cold February in Arkansas, literally on the streets, with only what was on their back. And you want to call this country a Christian nation, supported by Christian leaders and followers, and they steal from a Bible-believing ministry. And that's okay. Tony, at that time in the church, made a point of protesting this judge's appointment to the circuit court, to the Eighth Circuit. They even circulated a petition to block his appointment in the early 90s. Though this judge is on senior status on the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals that heard Tony's appeal on this conviction, what a coincidence, right? And I don't have to tell you that it has been denied, and Tony has one last appeal in limbo at this time, sitting in the judge's desk. So, let's leave it at that. I've got a minute here, but I'll get back in the next half hour. I want to show you the statistics this week on how many people this ministry is actually reaching still. And, they were reaching even more when he was out of jail with his radio shows all over the world, telling, some pretty darn good things about what the Vatican was doing. And basically, they're doing a lot of good things for people until the government came in and took it all. Basically stole it. And left a lot of people in the cold. They didn't care. And they did the same thing this time by taking a whole bunch of children. Now, Tony's the one being charged. Why did they want to dismantle the ministry? These people were doing good work. They wanted to dismantle this ministry because they were telling the truth about the Vatican and the government that works for them. And it's plain and simple. And people do not want to accept it. They have been brainwashed. They have been told the wrong story from the beginning. And people like this suffer because of it. And that's the plain and simple in this case. So, we're going to come back in the second half hour and continue on with it. I did want to mention that what can you do outside of bringing these stories to you on the radio? Well, I told you I was writing a screenplay and more or less a play for the theater, but it's kind of turning more into a screenplay. But it will, and what it's going to do is tell you this story so you can sit at a theater and watch it and see it before your eyes. See how this case shows you exactly what I've been talking about in this show for years. And I hope that I can find somebody to produce it, because you've got a lot of garbage out there right now in the theaters and in TV. Back in 3 minutes.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net. The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on internet or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately, and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe, so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening. Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased. It has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, we're back for the second half hour, and we're piecing through the Alamo case. And I recommend that you go back to my Friday show and many shows I've done in the last few months. Go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, or you can go to I know that Alamo Ministries website's putting up some of my stories, and rightfully so. This word needs to get out, and I'm glad they're doing that. Thank you. Also, what I wanted to mention was that. In this half hour, I did say something a long time ago, and maybe it's worth repeating. People asked me, well, who does the Vatican really go after? You know, who do they concentrate on? And I said, that's pretty easy. Anybody that has a big following. That's what they're interested in. You know, they don't care if you go to the local grocery store and talk to the cows come home. And the reason they don't care is because they're concerned with the masses. They want to keep the masses under control. They've already figured out that there's going to be a small percentage of people who really get it and don't fall into this quote. Let me give it to you. The years pass so quickly. Where did they go? So quickly, and then we get old. We never knew what it was all about. Well, there are some people that know what it's all about. But the Vatican wants to keep and our government want to keep that to a minimum. Now, when people start getting popular, or they start spreading the word to a lot of people, and a lot of people start going, hey, we ought to listen to this side of the story. Then they begin their attack campaign. Now, why did they attack Alamo Ministries? Because they're one of the few Christian ministries that had a big following. They had a number of different ministries across the country, and you could say they were successful in a sense that they helped a lot of people, and the government saw what was going on, how many people they reached. They saw their whole land holdings and said, "We got to get that." It's that simple. And the Vatican said, "You know, we can't allow these people to do this. We're the only ones that can, you know, spread the word, so to speak." But what kind of word are they spreading? I suggest to you they're spreading a bunch of lies. And they wanted to come down on a ministry that was basically outing them and saying, "Hey, look at what people did back. Look at the Protestant Reformation. Look how this country was formed. Look how they've taken control. Look what they've done," and they didn't like it. And so this week, you know how many hits they got on their website? On this subject, 296,679 from 89 countries, 38 U.S. universities, 39 foreign universities, all across the globe, who want to know about this story. Still to this day with him in jail. Now, when he was out of jail, I'm sure they've reached a lot more, because he used to do radio shows daily, sometimes 6 to 8 hours all across the world, paying for shortwave time, because you know you can't get this on ABC or NBC. Only the lies get out there. And so last week I brought this to you, and they had 256,000. Now they had 296,679. And I hope this radio show has added a little bit to that number, which I believe it has, because I've gotten a lot of people wanting to spread this word, saying, "Continue telling us this story," because I like somebody going in depth on something in this world instead of just giving us a 30-second news clip. So, we got countries all over the world, Spain, France, Swahili. I mean, I read them last week, and there's a few more added this week. And they want to know about the mystery Babylon. They want to know about what is the Antichrist. They want to know was really what happened to what's the story of Pope Francis, and who was he involved with in Argentina? A lot of other stories they want to know about that you don't get, that gets to the heart of the truth, so that you don't get old without knowing about what is going on in the world. Or really what's going on. And you know, when I started this story, I didn't really, you know, as a young journalist, I just thought maybe I could get to the truth, you know, about certain things that were upsetting to me that I'd see in government, because I grew up in Chicago in during the Daley administration, things like that. But little did I know that it would open up a can of worms that led right to the religion that I was born into. And what a beautiful thing that was. Because I believe there's two important things in life. If you belong to an organization, born into it, or belong or live in a country, know about the leaders of your country, what it's all about, and know about the religious organization, the hierarchy, what they're all about. Don't just blindly follow. So I said simply to people, because they'd say, "Well, why don't they, you know, the reason they attack people like Tony Alamo is because they have a large following. And they've done it not only to him, but to others." So let's remember that. Now, back to his trial. Some of the things that were so important. I mean, I've gone over these counts, and I'm going to do this in a very general way, because I have a lot more information specifically about each one of these counts. And if you go back to some of my shows, I think I got about halfway through the 10 counts. Now, we went over the Mann Act, what the intent of that act was and how it's being misused. Now, one thing that the prosecution did in this case was stress to the jury that it wasn't about Tony Alamo's travel. It was all about the reason for the girls traveling. Why did they go on these trips? The prosecution insisted that this was a sex crime case with the added element of travel. My question to them, if it was a sex crime, why did they not charge him with that crime? They charged him with a violation of the Mann Act. They asked the girls, why were you on these trips? Did you have any job? A couple of them and maybe others basically said they had no reason to go except to have sex. It seemed like this way, but the jury was given an out to still convict because, admittedly, there was no sex on the trips. Jenner, or the prosecution, also emphasized this point in the appeal reply. Now, I told you a long time ago, and I've gotten information from many people that were traveling on these trips, that the Alamo Ministry frequently traveled, and always with a large group. They had ministries in a number of different states. And there were constant responsibilities, not only in, you know, in the traveling for people that traveled, the adults and the children, and invariably, those that went without exception, all wanted to go for the trip's sake. Now, in count one, we'll go through these. There was a trip with Tony Lamo and his ministry in buses, in the summer bus trip, and the person who made count one asked to go at the last minute. In count two, the complainant rode from L.A. to Falk with a van of others against Tony Lamo's wishes. He didn't even want the person to go. In count three, another of the girl complainants rides with her mother from Falk, where Tony had resided, to their home in Moffat, Oklahoma, for a visit. Now, in the fourth count, the complainant rides with her mother back to Falk from a visit with family in Moffat. Now, does any of these sound like what the Mann Act was intended for? You know, white slavery? Pimps taking girls across the state line for sex and keeping them in brothels? Doesn't sound like anything like me. We got mothers traveling with their kids across state lines for purposes of ministry purposes. They belong to a ministry. They travel in buses. How many of you have ever, when you were a kid, taken a bus trip from the church you were belonging to? Sounds similar to me. Now, in count five, one of the complainants rides with the church members from Moffat back to Falk after a week's visit with her mother. Now, in count six, the same complainant and others are driven by church members from Nashville back to Falk. And Tony remained in Nashville. Count seven. Another complainant is on a ride with Tony for Tony's court hearing in L.A. The trip is aborted in Albuquerque. She stays overnight in a separate motel room with other women. They return to Fort Smith. Now, the same complainant rides in a motorhome from Fort Smith to West Virginia for a deposition of the witness on an IRS case. Now, in count nine, the same complainant did not go from Fort Smith, but did ride with Tony from West Virginia to the apartment in Memphis where there were a whole bunch of Alamo ministries who were people living during that IRS trial. There was never any trip to Fort Smith or to Memphis at all. Now, on the last count, the complainant flew from somewhere to L.A. from Falk. And at this time, Tony was already, he was already in L.A. So, we got to look at some of these counts closer. And we can start doing that. But before I want to do this, if I'm a prosecutor in this case, and I don't have, you know, this case, the Mann Act is ripe to, if you do it properly and you don't get a good defense, man, pity the person who the government is after and you're driving across state lines with somebody, a minor. And they want, you know, I mean, what they can about do anything they want if they can coerce the witness to say something. Maybe promise them something. Maybe offer them something. Maybe get a disgruntled person, you know, how people are. And that's exactly what they did in this case. But you think the judge cared? No. And we went over before exactly the preparation, and they take these witnesses to a place where they're kept for a couple weeks, constantly promised stuff, talked to, but then we, you know, blah, 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 coerced until they finally could get something that they could kind of manipulate into a conviction. That's what I would think as a defense attorney. Now, as a defense attorney, what I have to do to protect my client is show that. But none of this stuff comes up in the trial. So how, you know, the jury is like listening to a one-sided story, right? Exactly what the prosecution wanted. And what were the defense attorneys, you know, sitting there with their thumbs in their mouth? Or were they intimidated to a point where they don't, you know, maybe they, you know, we got to do business with these people again. And if I give this guy a good defense, you know, I'm going to be blackballed as a defense attorney. Who knows? I mean, it's a frame job from the beginning right to the end. And the end result is the ministry is still there. They're getting, there's been civil cases filed against them, the largest one in Arkansas history of $500 million. I mean, just a lot of things that tell me that it wasn't strictly Tony Alamo's activities they were after. It was what he was saying. We had to get him some way, shut him up, and then shut his ministry down. And it just so happens he used to talk against the Vatican. And you don't think they have any power? Come on. Now, in that first, let's see what time we got here, because we can go through some of these counts. And to show you some things. Now, in the first count, it was in November 2004, a trip from Arkansas to California. Now, several people all testified that it was not Tony's idea for the complainant to be on this bus trip at all. These people, they were doing final packing of sound equipment at around 2 a.m. in the office shortly before leaving. And one of the complainants, along with two other people, asked if they could go. Now, another person also witnessed that besides seeing one of the complainants packing her suitcase in a room earlier that night, she was doing this even before she was asked to go. Now, another one testified of planning with the complainant earlier that day to ask to go on the trip. I guess they were packing sound equipment. Maybe they were going to do a speech or whatever. I'm not sure. She testified that they decided to pre-pack in case they did get to go. So they wanted to go because by the time they asked, it would be too late to pack, and they wanted to be ready if they got the okay. Now, there was a long list of things I found out that Tony wanted to accomplish in L.A. And someone did testify to that fact. And he carried out those plans, and the trip was from November 13th to December 23rd, 2004. Okay. So there we have that count, a violation of the Mann Act. Okay. All right. Now, there's a whole bunch of other counts. There's like nine other counts, and I've got some specific information, just like this, on those counts that I want to, bring to you. But what I did want to say, this can get a little tedious, but what I'm trying to show you is that In a couple of the earlier shows, I tried to show you the irregularities that were going on prior to the case, how these witnesses, how the government was going after anyone. They were like hounding people to testify, and even people that came forward said they were promised things if they testified against Tony, and they found nothing. Now, they did coerce and take these four people up to Well Springs or wherever. It's a place, supposedly a institution that rehabilitates But anyway, that we've gotten into some of the irregularities of that place and how they worked together with the feds. But they were taken there and kept under lock and key almost until I think the government got what they wanted. And they only could do it by coercion and promising gifts and money and schooling and things and other things. Now, totally irregular. I mean, if you're a defense attorney, my goodness, you have a field day in court. But none of this stuff was brought up. And then the thing that really saddened me was that how many, I went through a list of the witnesses, and I'll go over some of them again, that were not allowed to testify, weren't even investigated. After the list was given to the defense attorneys so that a proper defense could be handled. Now, some of the background information on the second count is extensive. And what I think I'll do with this is hold it off, because we can only take so much, and I only have 5 minutes. And I'll remind myself to pick up here to give you kind of an idea of what I'm trying to do, and that is to give you the whole picture so that you can make up your mind. And I'm trying to give you evidence and facts that support my original statement, and that is he was framed for talking against the beast as well as connecting the beast to our federal state governments. And I believe all this information, once you start compiling it and looking at it, lays a lot of credence to what I'm saying. Now, most people won't even open their ears to this. And the reason they won't open their ears to it is because they've been brainwashed their whole life by the same people I'm talking about here, who have taken this country from the beginning, turned it upside down for a reason, and that is control, and eventually a one-world government, a one-world order where your rights are completely gone. They're almost gone now, but not completely. But they're not happy until that happens. And this is just one story of how they do it. Because I am firmly convinced the major tool they use is propaganda, lies, deceit about freedom, democracy, and the whole shot, so that we become a country that is basically the Roman military to spread the New World Order throughout the world under the guise of freedom. But if we aren't even free at home, if we can't even speak the truth about the Bible, if we can't speak the truth about our religious organizations that have gone haywire, if we cannot speak the truth about our own government and we are silenced, this does not exist. And that is what is happening here. Now, secondly, instead of presenting all these crazy internet shows that lead you into revolt or lead you into seclusion as being a survivor and you've got to go into the woods and, you know, which is totally wrong, I try to bring you facts that lead you to understand this beast, to understand how it operates, so that you can live with it, because you are not going to ever defeat it totally. You think you can overthrow the United States government? This has been going on for years, hundreds of years. You may not be able to overthrow it. Don't fall into the trap that all these other people, these broadcasters who sit there and get you emotionally excited, appeal to your emotions, not to your mind. I'm appealing to your mind. I'm wanting you to think about this deeply. And then I believe you can live a better life. You'll be around long enough so that the beast won't get you involved in revolt and then turn the tide on you and say, oh, you're fighting against God and your country. Look at you. You're nothing more than just a homeland terrorist. That's where it all leads if you listen to some of these guys on the internet these days. And just and then there's a whole other side of them that they go, be ready for the end. Here's what you got to do. You got to store up 8,000 gallons of water. You got to build this thing. You got to, you know, by the time you're done with all that, you ain't got time to do anything else. Who wants to live like that anyway? To be really honest with you. And that's why the key to this whole thing is understanding. To get it, to appeal to your mind, not always to your emotions. Sure, stories have emotional effect. But you've got to think about really how, one, you were, I don't think I'm any different than a lot of you people. I grew up under the same country under, you know, I was born a Catholic. I know how I was brainwashed. I know how what it took for me to undo that and the price that I paid for it. But in the end, the reward is so much greater. And I'm not talking about financial rewards. I'm not talking about living in a mansion up in La Jolla or in Malibu. Oh, and there's a lot of those out there. Think they're on the right path of truth. I'm talking about completely understanding this story so that you can lead a better life and not end up like that quote I read you. The years pass so quickly, don't they? And where do they all go? So quickly, and then what happens? We get old. And we sit back and never knew what it was all about. Well, I'm telling you, you don't have to be that way. Oh, you're going to get old. And you're going to know all the years go by so quickly. But you're going to know what it's all about. And you're going to be a lot happier. And it doesn't matter about the money or anything. And just think about that throughout your day. And you're listening to the Investigative Journal. I'll be back tomorrow. I've got some more on the Alamo case, more on Tupper Saucy, more on a whole bunch of things. And have a good evening. And, of course, have a good night.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and